right, welcome back, everybody. Here we are once again back in the mole zone, Dom. I can't believe it.
Yeah, I honestly never thought we would be coming back in here for the Mole 2, not just because we switched the format to a different thing for a few months and now we're coming back finally, but I assume that would rule it out. But then also, I feel like the first season of the Mole has a certain kind of intrigue and status associated with it. It was the first of its kind, and just the Mole as a concept, even if people maybe are a bit hazy on the specifics, they can't remember who was the Mole, who won the Mole. You know, they have some kind of memory of that season, and then the Mole 2 was just a sequel, right? So it's easy for that one to kind of fade from the public memory. But I'm excited to get back into this. I remember this as a good season. You know, what little I do remember of it. And so far, speeding through this rewatch, that has certainly borne that out.
So if anyone has missed it and would be interested, Dom and I did complete episode-by-episode coverage of The Mole 1 on the Patreon feed, patreon.com/DomandColin, which actually may be where people are hearing this right now as well. But if you would be interested in that, because The Mole, both of the first two seasons with Anderson Cooper, are now up on the U.S. version of Netflix. I found out about 5 minutes before we came on air that Dom still does not have access to watching these in Canada. But for anyone in America who is maybe now a bit more inclined to check it out now that it's much easier to get online, already done with The Mole Season 1. So if you're starting there, do go check those out if you'd be interested in that. But we are back to do The Mole 2 now, which is something we had always said we would be interested in doing. It just didn't seem very feasible before. But again, as mentioned, it's all up on Netflix now. And actually, before we even get into The Mole itself and The Mole 2 and Episode 1, let me begin by saying, shame on Netflix for not having this at the absolute top of my algorithm. Like, I had to actively go and find the episodes. I wasn't sure if they were even up yet. I can't believe that that wasn't something they had pieced together just based on my previous interests. And I'm assuming Netflix is in cahoots with whoever's listening to me on my phone that has probably been next to me when recording all of these podcasts about The Mole. So I was shocked and dismayed, both, Dom, to see that Netflix did not have this at the absolute tip top of my home screen as soon as it was available. No alerts on my phone.
Yeah, they've sliced up your life and your profile to such a granular degree that any advertiser can know anything they want about you, apparently, except that you're a big fan of The Mole and would gladly watch it as soon as it returns to their catalog.
I don't know the number of times that I have publicly declared with a microphone next to me how eager I am for The Mole 2 to become available somewhere. So job not well done by Netflix there, but hopefully others are able to find it easily. I'm just nervous that it may not be getting the exposure that it is necessarily due, considering
Netflix US was at least kind enough to put The Mole on their catalog, and you know, Paul Collin had to type into the serve bar or whatever to bring it up, as opposed to me having to trawl through these highly suspect and possibly illegal link sites just to unearth this grainy, low definition VCR footage of The Mole from back in the early 2000s.
Yeah, oh, well, I'm just a bit nervous because I have heard that at the very least, like, casting has been underway, and I don't know what the status is on if it's even happening or if it's been filmed yet, but there have certainly been rumors all over the place about The Mole potentially coming back, this time at least potentially under a different name. But in reading through whatever it was that I read about this possibility, it very much seemed like The Mole. And for anyone unfamiliar, The Mole is a show where 14 players are going to work together to win money for the prize pool. And then the winner is going to get to take home that entire prize pool at the end of the series. However, one of those 14 people is The Mole, a double agent working to sabotage the missions and take money out of the prize pool. And then each round, the contestants take a quiz about the identity of The Mole, and whoever does the worst on the quiz each week is the one eliminated, nay, executed Dom, which still seems a little violent to me, of a way of putting it there.
I'm looking at BuzzerBlog, so this is a source for game show news updates, it looks like. And yeah, this is an article from May of this year talking about The Insider, a show which has been casting kind of under the radar a few months ago, and I think is due to film later this year, may actually be filming now as it happens. And the release, the description for the show in the casting notices basically is just a straight up description of The Mole, but with The Mole copied and pasted, replaced with the word insider. So, so it certainly looks like the show is coming back, perhaps under a new guise, a new name, but very excited to follow that as it develops. And this may end up being more timely than we possibly could have expected. But can you confirm to me, as one of these highly privileged American Netflix owners, that is The Mole 2, our topic for this series, is it in better quality up on Netflix there?
It's still in glorious 4:3 definition,
okay.
I actually laughed at, it seemed like, at least to me, and maybe my eyes are just finally going on me, but I would say that the definition is maybe the worst I've ever seen on Netflix. Like the text, it seems, reads a little bit weirdly to me. There may have been some issues formatting that properly or whatever, but it is certainly better than the like VCR quality that I feel like has been the only thing available to us over the last couple of decades or so on illegal link sites, where you can stream with all of the pop-up ads that you could ever want. But I brought it up.
It really is amazing how we take for granted just how good TV is nowadays from a visual perspective. Even when, you know, we make fun of Game of Thrones for being just like not lit whatsoever in some of its more important scenes.
Not lit in either sense of the word, Dom.
Well, quite. But just cinematically, you know, TV nowadays is leaps and bounds ahead of where it used to be. And it's weird to think that boomers who back in the 1980s or 1990s were still watching 4 or 5 hours of TV a day on average, all of that TV looked worse than the worst TV show does nowadays. It's weird to think about.
Yeah, well, to return to the algorithm idea, I am somewhat nervous that the news of The Mole coming back, I don't know, again, the details of who is interested in producing this new version of The Mole, but I am concerned that happening or not may come down to the numbers that the original run of The Mole gets on YouTube and maybe, or excuse me, on Netflix. And maybe it's completely unrelated and that's either happening or not, either way. But that was why I brought up like the algorithm not finding me in the first place. I am deeply concerned that the algorithm may not be finding many people who would be interested in The Mole and don't know to be like actively looking for it.
Yeah, I have to think that if this new show, whatever it's called, is indeed filming as we speak, then it's going to find a home somewhere. But yeah, what kind of home that is may end up depending on if the show that it is literally a carbon copy ripoff of, puts up good numbers in this short window here.
Yeah, so in this one case, I would not like for The Mole to just be burrowed away out of my sight. I would love to find out that The Mole is being heavily promoted, although I don't know how likely it is that Netflix is going too hard in the 20-year-old reality shows department, unless people have somehow had their love of Anderson Cooper made known to the algorithm there. But excited to be diving in here, Dom, and I, like you, have not rewatched The Mole in some time. Well, actually, let me begin with your origin story of The Mole too, because I was watching it in real time as it was airing on ABC in 2001 or whatever. When and how did you ever see The Mole 2 before?
My origin story for The Mole 2 is I watched The Mole and I liked it, so I watched The Mole 2. It doesn't really get any more complicated than
that. Well, the complexity is, over the years, it's been much easier to find The Mole 1 than The Mole 2.
I do remember when I was put on the trail of the Celebrity Mole, I think in particular Dennis Rodman's season, Yucatan, many years ago, and tracking that one down, I think that one may have been on YouTube, but then disappeared not too long after that. And this may have been in the broader, like a quirky dude, Stentalizer era of the golden age of reality TV on YouTube, where it seemed like everything was basically just a click away. And I'm sure if you get creative, you can find most of that stuff on Daily Motion or whatever still. And it's out there on the internet somewhere. If you're willing to bear the health risk of your computer, possibly to download it or whatever. But I don't know. I don't have a clear, you know, memory or time scale of that. I think I just I added it to the queue at one point and eventually got around to watching it.
Okay. Job well done, however you were able to do that, because I have certainly spent a lot of time trying to find The Mole 2 in a watchable format over the years, but everything I can ever find is like someone videotaping their TV while The Mole plays on it, and it looks terrible, and I've never found it worth it to go back. But I am so excited that it's up on Netflix, and I will say it went up earlier today, and I've already watched through the first three episodes, and I'm guessing by the time we're in here again, I will hopefully at least be very close to having watched the whole season. And I have always been someone who has just let my memory, I guess, for the most part, guide me on this. But I have always thought of myself as a person who prefers The Mole 2 to The Mole 1 and all of the celebrity moles and The Mole 5. The Mole 2 has, in my mind, always stood out as kind of like the crown jewel of the franchise, and I'm curious to see how that take evolves now that I'm actually able to watch the whole thing again. But through the first three episodes, I feel very affirmed along those lines. I feel like there is a noticeable step up in quality between The Mole 2 and The Mole 1.
What lessons, broadly speaking, do you think they learned from The Mole 1, beyond just what types of camera to use or whatever?
There are exceptions to this, and I'm sure we will cover them along the way. One of them is certainly going to come up here in the premiere, as far as I thought an issue in The Mole 1, particularly near the end game, was some of the missions being a bit too difficult for the players, and them being very unlikely to actually win money to such an extent.
That does not seem to be an issue so far this season, as far as I can tell.
We'll get there. It's a tough balance to strike, because you don't want them to be like automatic, but you also don't want them to be impossible. But I think they get at least better at that this time around, or maybe the cast is just a lot more capable than the cast of the season of The Mole season one was, all due respect to a lot of those legends that we've already talked about again in our coverage of that season. But moreover, I feel like they get either better at finding ways of doing this, or just doing this more often, where Anderson is like at dinner with the group, or like at the hotel at night with the group. And it feels to me like anytime Anderson is there, something could be and probably is going on for at least one or a couple of people within the group, where the game could be happening at pretty much any time, even if the players think it's their downtime. And the smallest thing, something as small as who gets the last piece of cake at dinner, could have a major impact on the game. I feel like they introduce more of those kinds of, I'm reluctant to call them twists, because I think they are just kind of part of the game proper, but a lot more small, shorter segments that offer temptations or exemptions specifically to players along the way. They find ways of making that sort of thing more compelling and more frequent, and I'm a big fan of that. Through these first three episodes that I've watched, I've been a big fan of how the exemptions in particular have been introduced and the ways that they're making sure everyone's just constantly on their toes.
Yeah, and you see that even in this first episode, where when they are on location, you see Anderson talking to Olavia on the bridge, and someone else makes a comment to the effect of, well, I'm sure they're not just making polite conversation, because maybe they've seen the first season and are just drawing some conclusions from that, or they have their head screwed on straight, and they know whenever Anderson is around talking to someone, something is afoot. And maybe Anderson's agenda is there is no agenda and he's just trying to mess with them, but that still is him playing a role in the game in a way that there are many game shows like this or reality shows where the host is there and the host is just moving the process along and just filling some kind of necessary role, but they aren't a participant the way that Anderson Cooper certainly seems to be and seems to revel in being at times.
Yeah, and for anyone who missed our season one coverage, what I have seen so far of season two is not moving me off of the take that Anderson Cooper on The Mole is the greatest reality TV host of all time. He is nailing this from minute one.
And it's weird to say that, if you told someone that before they'd even seen a minute of The Mole and they went in, I don't think they would be blown away by his hosting prowess or whatever. It's hard to pinpoint these are the things he actively does that make him such a good host. But maybe that's kind of the point. Maybe his role is to just stay in the background and be part of the furniture, but actually have this this part that maybe is not visible to you as the audience member, but feels so natural in just guiding things towards their natural conclusion.
I'm sure we will be lavishing Anderson with praise, if that's the right word, if that's the right use of lavishing, over the course of this rewatch. But let's, before we dive too heavy into the specifics here, let's flag up what we are doing as far as spoilers go. I think the general plan, and there may be some things that slip through the cracks, particularly probably as season one is, as far as season one is concerned, I will at least attempt to be going through the episodes, whichever ones we're talking about in a given podcast, without spoiling any of the upcoming episodes from The Mole 2, and doing our best not to get into ultra heavy specifics from season one either, because I'm guessing there are probably going to be some people who have not seen that at least anytime necessarily recently who would want to go back and rewatch that one as well. So we will try to tread gently along both of those lines. And then after we've gotten through the episode at hand, then we will get into the spoiler zone, where anyone who wants to tune out, who hasn't seen the rest of this, is fully free to do so. But we can get into discussion about what we saw that week with full knowledge of how things are going to play out from there, or at least the results from there. I'm probably wrong in just describing it as full knowledge, because I pretty much don't remember anything that happens that I haven't rewatched today. People know what I'm saying. We will try to be gentle along those lines until we get into the designated spoiler zone. But Dom, let's dive in here, I believe, on The Mole 2, Episode 1. And right away, I like this a lot. We see the group of contestants who, I'm guessing, have not gotten to interact before. Maybe they passed each other in the hallways during casting or whatever. You certainly hear a lot about that sort of thing in the Survivor and Big Brother worlds. But for all intents and purposes, this is the first time they've ever gotten to get to know each other. They all are assembled in some room together in, where are we, Switzerland? Is that right? Am I already off to a terrible start and we're in Sweden or something?
I want to say France and Italy. Let me take a look here.
I don't think we're in France and or Italy, but either way, wherever
we are in Switzerland and then later Italy. And this actually was one of the, I guess, cosmetic changes of sorts from the first season, where in that first time we traveled around a lot. And I think actually in The Mole 5, they actually did a fair amount of traveling around as well. In this season, they mostly stayed in the same broad location. I think that they felt the travel aspect of the show was kind of a distraction. And honestly, if you're keeping them in these lavish digs in some 4 or 5-star hotel, as long as you have that element to it, which I think is key for the whole aesthetic of the show, then who really cares beyond that?
Yes. Would you feel... All right, dumb question. I was going to ask... if you would feel like this would almost be more appropriate to have kind of like whodunit vibes, where people are always dressed up fairly nicely for the for dinners and for the quizzes and so forth. But I now recognize a lot of these challenges are not going to be very conducive to that sort of thing. And they may be going for a separate vibe entirely there, but they all remove their blindfolds and then straight off the bat have to pick two people who seem like natural born leaders. And they end up going with the older guy, Bill, and the lawyer, Darwin, and it turns out that their role in this challenge is going to be dividing the rest of the group up into participants for 3 separate games, and then with a loose idea of what those games are going to be, Bill and Darwin are going to be betting a total of $60,000 across those 3 games, but they're going to be doing so in increments of one will be worth $40,000, one will be worth $20,000, and one will be worth $0. And the players who are competing in those games won't know definitively which prize amount is at stake for their particular game. It could be worth $40,000. It could be worth $20,000. It could be worth absolutely nothing. But right away, Dom, I think this is really highlighting one of the strengths of the mole, which is people are virtually across the board going to be playing different roles within a given mission. Not every single time, but I'm guessing pretty close to every single episode. And I think this is one of the best elements about just the mole in general, is people being isolated from the group and having a large amount of responsibility placed upon them, either individually or as one of a couple of people, as like a major decision maker for that round. I think the mole would be severely missing out on being as good as it could be if they were not doing this sort of thing, and if every single time everyone was just totally equal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I so like to see that they're getting right back into this sort of thing right off the bat. And the way that this is going to play out is Bill and Darwin find out they are going to be splitting people into pick three people who are going to be good at this biking / crossbow shooting event, pick four people who are going to be good at walking across this kind of like ropes course, tight rope, without their heart rates getting above 130 beats per minute. You need some cool customers for this one. And then the remaining five people are all going to have to take what Anderson calls the plunge of death, which it seems like is kind of like bungee jumping, more just being pushed off of a ledge by a guy who seems to be taking an immense amount of pleasure in pushing people who don't want to be pushed off of this ledge, and falling a great depth to not necessarily their death, but they're not really going to be into this sort of thing. So you need the five people who are hopefully not going to say no to that to be part of that last event there. And then the way this ends up playing out is the biathlon people, the bikers and crossbow people, are pretty quickly able to complete their event. That is, for the record, Bob, Bribs, and Rob, who are going to be successful there.
Hold up a second. Do we have a Sierra situation on our hands with Bob, Rob, and Bribs?
I was wondering if one of Rob or Bob was like forced to go by Bob instead of Rob or Robbie or Robert or something like that, and that he didn't actually go by Bob in real life.
If I was Bob there, I would insist on being called Bobs just to rile up Bribs. I think that would be fun for at least the rest of the cast, if not Bribs himself. The name Bribs is just so, for some reason, so memorable and funny to me, because he seems like, at least so far, just kind of normal guy, nothing too remarkable about him. You don't really remember his participation in these early tasks. And yet, just the name Bribs, for some reason, after, you know, years after I watched the season for the first time and forgot most of the salient details, I can remember, okay, this person's the mole, this person's the winner, and also there's Bribs. And that was about the extent of my knowledge.
So I definitely remember from my initial watch many just totally random things that I'm sure are going to pop up along the way here, and I will try to flag them up as they become relevant. But one of the things I remember is 12-year-old Colin, or however old I was, right around there, old Colin, watching this for the first time, wondering what kind of name Bribs was. And then somewhere along the way, we get a shot of him holding his bag of like his clothes and whatever else. And you can see that on his bag, I believe the name is Michael, but it has his actual first name that he's just never called by on the show. And I definitely remember being like, wait, who the hell is Michael? And why is he carrying around their bag there?
I believe you at one point that gets like taped over and you just see this hand-drawn Bribs on there instead. Yeah, he didn't want his cover to be blown, so he had to jerry-rig a solution somehow.
That's funny. But yeah, they are going to ultimately be successful in that first event, and then we go to the tightrope at this ropes course or wherever we are, where we find Heather, Myra, Lisa, and Al posed with getting across this relatively high up wire without their heart rate going over 130 beats per minute, or else they have to just stand in place and wait for it to drop back down. The three ladies end up doing this, it seems like, pretty effortlessly. They have a combined 1 hour for the four of them to complete this task. And Al, who has, it sounds like through context, been talking a big game about how good he's going to be at this sort of thing, can't even climb up the pole to get to the starting position on the rope without his heart rate going above the requisite 130 beats per minute that he needs to keep it under. And so he's doing a lot of just kind of standing in place and being told to calm down and how to calm down. But at the end of the day, he is going to be able to get this done as well. But a good introduction here to Aldom, who was definitely someone who stood out in my memory of people I was looking forward to seeing again.
I'm a big Al fan so far, and I really got a kind of a Jim vibe from the first season of The Mole with Al. And I do wonder how consciously they were trying to recreate some of the character archetypes or some of the personalities from the first season. And I think Al and Jim is one of the more direct comparisons, but I don't know if any others really stood out to you at all. I guess like Bill and Charlie maybe, although Bill seems much more good humored than Charlie ever, you know, gave the pretense of being.
Yeah, that also stood out, but I also just wondered if I was being ageist there. Also, this is going to sound so dumb considering the way things played out for the two of them. I got some Steven vibes from Bob, but it may just be he looks a bit like Steven with his baseball hat and soul patch or whatever.
Bob did sketch me out a little bit, but I guess came across in the first episode, so didn't have time to get too sidetracked by him. But I feel like if I had to compete in one of these three tasks, and I was sincerely trying to win money for the pot, I wasn't the mole here, I would snap off the plunge of death, as weird as that sounds, because with the biathlon event and the tightrope, there is at least some element of skill involved, where or some way that things could go wrong, where you know, even though it seemed like they had so much time that you couldn't reasonably expect to fail either of those first two tasks, I could see myself being the Caitlin Herman who, you know, there's some mystified production assistant thinking, we gave them so long and he still wasn't able to do it. Whereas the plunge of death, I don't have to do anything. I just jump and then, you know, the rope takes me where it takes me. It's almost a very sedentary task in that respect, if that makes sense.
Yeah, you just have to agree to sit there and let this diabolical guy shove you off the ledge. But that is a worthwhile point to flag up, that these first two did require some amount of either skill or willingness to keep going. The bike certainly didn't seem easy during that first part, and your heart rate is a factor in the second one that could easily just kind of get in the way there, whereas the final task, the plunge of death, really does just come down to whether or not you consent to do this, and everything else is pretty independent. You can just let gravity do the rest from there until, Dom, we get to the plunge of death. We see the first four in the form of Katie, Patrick, Dorothy, and Allie go through with it, and all we have left now is Olavia as our fifth person here, and if she does it, all three missions are accomplished. Doesn't matter what amount they bet on any of them, we're getting the 60,000, and we have had a very successful first day or two or so as a team there, except for Anderson is going to pull Olavia aside just before it is her turn to go to close things out for the group and say, Olavia, if you agree to pass on doing this and refuse to go, the group will not get whatever amount of money has been assigned to this task, but you will get an exemption. And interestingly, and I think this is a good decision on their end, we don't hear much of Olavia kind of thinking that through, and maybe it's because she just immediately said, yes, I'll take it. But they go from Anderson asking her to a commercial break back to she and Anderson just being in front of the group to deliver her decision there. And we ultimately find out that she is going to take him up on that proposition and get the exemption for herself. I did think it would be worth getting into, since this is going to be a pretty routine thing along the way here. There were definitely plenty of exemptions given out on The Mole 1, but I don't know that it was necessarily every single week, where at least through these early episodes thus far, there is at least one exemption, if not multiple exemptions, given out. And I believe it could at least potentially be the case that this is going to be a more important kind of talking point for the Mole 2 than it was for the Mole 1. If you are in Olavia's spot, do you feel like there are any major pros or cons of taking this exemption in an early week where, yes, you have very little information, but you also have a very low chance of being eliminated?
So that is another one of the changes this season, is that exemptions play a much bigger role from the very first episode, as opposed to just kind of being smuggled in as a novelty to spice things up a little bit later on. And they do become this recurring feature of the season. I think this kind of reaches its extreme in the Mole 5, where you see this really cutthroat focus by a lot of the players on securing that exemption for themselves. And it feels like a much more individualistic game. But I think back here in the Mole 2, it's kind of in this in-between space where people are not being that proactive in going for it. But Olavia faced with this tough choice in the first episode, where can't begrudge her really for wanting to take that exemption when you have as little information as you're ever going to have in the game about who the Mole could conceivably be. That said, I think it is somewhat limiting as you get towards the end, where if you think this is not a thing that the Mole would ever do in the first episode to draw that attention to themselves, and I don't know if that's true, maybe the Mole is like bluffing or double bluffing, or you can never really take anything totally for granted, but I think it's fair to say if someone does this that early on, draws all that attention to themselves, probably it means they're a bit less likely to be the Mole. The issue is when you get down to the final three, if you're Olavia and it's you, the actual Mole, potentially, and someone else, then that really narrows that other person's range of decisions in terms of who it could be. And there's going to be so much more information stacking up over time that how much is that one thing going to weigh into that final decision? They probably made their mind up well in advance and have just been assigning all of the questions on the quiz to the same person every single week, and that's why they're still here. But even so, it feels like anything that puts you out there and on the map early on, if you're not the Mole, can kind of come back to bite you in the end. In that
yes,
sense.
And that is, I think, the primary counter that you are considering when weighing the idea of free safety. I think it's honestly less to do with the potential prize money that you might win down the line. It's going to take a lot for you to be the eventual winner. It is merely a consideration of, if I take this exemption, is that kind of outing myself as not the Mole, which I don't think it necessarily is. We will certainly go on to see plenty of suspicion cast against Olavia over the course of this season. But yeah, I'm always going to have a hard time faulting anyone for going for an exemption, because even setting aside like game theory kind of dynamics, it does seem like any time you are offered an exemption could very conceivably be the last time you were offered an exemption over the course of that season. These are very difficult to come by. And again, this is the very beginning. And yes, while you do have a low chance of being eliminated if you say no, you have a 0% chance of being eliminated if you just take the exemption. And the good news for her is she's going to take it and the group is going to fail that mission. However, we go back to Bill and Darwin to get their prize money breakdowns, and it turns out that they bet, I guess, $40,000 on the biathlon game and $20,000 on the tightrope heartbeat monitor game. And so whatever happened here at the plunge of death was completely irrelevant, and everyone just got freaked out for no reason, and that psycho guy who pushes people off the ledge just got his jollies for free. And so that is going to be very good news for the group, because moments after Olavia announces that she's going to be exempt and they're not going to get anything, turns out they're not going to get anything anyway. So at least a bit of a blow softener there.
I think that is a recurring issue with the Mole, though, is that it's so easy for the tasks themselves or any one person's actions within the task to be completely irrelevant. And even though this is the primary medium through which you're meant to be able to identify the mole, is they're trying to sabotage the tasks. And if you piece all the clues together, or you catch them in the act, and now you have reliable information as to who the mole might be, that seems like it very rarely actually happens in practice. And then also, when you're following along at home, often you can't really identify, this is the moment where, oh, I think they're acting a bit sus in the task, so maybe they're the mole. It feels like often the task is just a kind of backdrop against which general things happen. And so it becomes like this weird form of taskmaster almost, where if the task itself isn't particularly interesting, then the episode is just gonna drag in the middle. I guess the characters themselves maybe could save the episode if, you know, there's an argument, or you have someone just constantly seeding the show who you can rely on to deliver good TV. And that's why I think having the exemptions as more of a focus actually does help, because now this is a plot line you can come back to. This is a way for individual cast members to actually put themselves out there, for better or for worse, and take that risk and chase some kind of individual reward.
Yeah, and I thought the group kind of reaction that we saw in at least a couple of little snippets of people giving their thoughts on Olavia taking the exemption in private during their like mole confessionals or whatever was an interesting one, and potentially could have been a bit different if this were the first season of The Mole. But we see people voice certainly kind of like admittedly selfish anger about Olavia now being exempt, but they are, I think for the most part, offering up the caveat of, but I get why she did it, and I probably would have done the same thing myself. And I don't know if necessarily that was the same kind of sentiment they were getting with those early exemptions in season one. But I thought that was an interesting kind of development there, that everyone goes in knowing, okay, what an exemption is and why they are so juicy to want to go for, and being mentally prepared for this sort of thing to be happening pretty regularly over the course of the season. But
and yet all of them are acting very reasonable about it, at least in this season. You know, season five is a different story, but this maybe is an artifact of that kind of a more genteel era of like early 2000s reality TV, where everyone is a little more understanding about these things than they would be eventually. And you can imagine in a more modern season of The Inside, perhaps, or The Mole, were that to return, if, you know, half the confessionals about the exemption would be some generic, like, I have to get the exemption to secure my own safety in the game, just that very, like, strategic pablum or whatever. And then the other half would be someone who was deliberately cast to cause drama because they would have failed the psych exam, but that's the whole point. That's a feature, not a bug. Just blowing a fuse and going off the rails because someone had the audacity to seek an exemption for themselves, and that argument is going to be the dramatic centerpiece of the episode now.
I totally see what you're saying. And if memory serves, I think the anger about a lot of the season five exemptions were virtually all of us, if not literally all of us, who are just regular contestants at a certain point know with absolutely no doubt who the mole is, and it's just brutal to watch someone else get the exemption when the rest of us who are not exempt are more or less just going to be like flipping a coin to see who can do the quiz the fastest this week and get the smallest detail right, and that's going to be the big difference maker. And I think that is a noticeably different kind of dynamic than early on in the second season here, specifically like week one, where no one really knows anything. But your larger point definitely stands, and it actually lines up with something else that I was about to get into, which is I could see a world where this season of The Mole 2 could easily be confused for the first season of The Mole, and I mean that in a complimentary way, where even though this is a cast full of people who have seen the show before and know roughly what to be looking for along the way here, I feel like The Mole 2 still captures all of the magic of The Mole 1 while making some, for the most part, kind of production improvements along the way. But if you had told me that this season was The Mole 1, I don't know what would stand out to make me not believe that, other than constantly seeing the graphic of The Mole 2. I would not be blown away to, in some alternate universe, see this cast of people play this same game without any sort of frame of reference and have it be more or less the same. And I mean that in a good way. I'm not sure if I'm describing this super well, but hopefully people understand roughly what I'm getting at.
There's no real continuity between the first season and this season. I don't think they ever, as far as I can recall, explicitly refer to who the first mob was, who the first winner was, maybe not wanting to spoil it for people going back to watch, although I really doubt that was a strong concern for them.
I mean, going back to watch wasn't a thing in 2001. If you didn't catch it when it was on, you're out of luck.
Yeah, unless, you happen to, get the first season on VCR and just shove it in an attic somewhere. You know, you really had to work hard to do that. But, there certainly was from a kind of analog era of reality TV, so to speak. And, that shows in a lot of aspects in the season. But, yeah, like you said, this could be the mole, and what we think of as the mole could be the mole to the next betrayal. And I don't think anyone would be too confused or shaken up by that.
Exactly. And yeah.
I don't think you can tell from the way that these cast members are playing the game that any lessons have been learned from the first season, or that there really were any lessons to learn from that first season. I think that, once you learn you're going on the show and that the format for it is basically the same as it was before, there's nothing really new to sink your teeth into. You can just deduce, as we try to do in our coverage of the first season, what are the flaws in this format? What are the consequences of it in terms of who's more or less likely to be the mole, if that's something you can work out? But beyond that, like, what more is there to get to, really?
Yeah, and I was thinking to myself as I was watching this, obviously we don't have anywhere close to the same number of seasons or number of years of the mole being on TV that we have for Survivor and Big Brother. But I was both like curious and maybe incorrectly, but I have a strong suspicion that it would probably have gone this route at a certain point, kind of nervous about what would have become of the mole if it had stayed on TV for like 20 years. Even the follow-up seasons that we got later on, not to diminish the overall watchability of The Celebrity Mole and The Mole 5, but I feel like those were kind of a noticeable step down from The Moles 1 and 2. But if we did just get like 20 seasons over the course of 20 years of The Mole proper, I can't even begin to answer this question myself, but I would imagine there would be a pretty noticeable kind of evolution, and it would become a borderline unrecognizable game, just the same way all the other shows we've covered have that have been on that long. But maybe not. Maybe The Amazing Race is, yeah.
I think that there is no real room for the show to evolve, and that's maybe the fundamental constraint that it's operating with, because as we mentioned with the first season, it's almost like the identity of the mole doesn't matter, and it's not something you can really work out other than through either some like clues, some external clues that aren't really meant to be smuggled into the show. Like we talked about some of that in our finale wrap up there. If you happen to wise up to some of those, or if you have a theory about the type of person that production would want to cast as the mole, and then that maybe feeds into your predictions. Or as it turns out, a lot of the cast members in season one did, you just decide someone is the mole. You have a hunch, or there's one thing that leads you in that direction, and then you just stick with it. And that's your person, and you just align all the answers with them on the quiz until you get eliminated. And then whoever has not got eliminated by the end, well, that's the winner, and the other person is the loser, and the third person is the mole. And that's just how it's going to be. I don't know if you had someone sit down and watch these two seasons and season five and the celebrity seasons, because they kind of suck, but hey, why not? And the other 20 seasons of The Mole that exist in this hypothetical universe, I don't know if they would have any better an idea of how to win The Mole than someone who was just going in blind for the first season, like the rest of their cast.
So I agree with a lot of what you're saying, and maybe it is the case. I brought up The Amazing Race near the end of that there, just because I do think that's a show that certainly has made plenty of changes along the way, but still isn't like a completely different thing than it once was, because it doesn't have to be. The same way that Survivor and Big Brother constantly feel compelled to introduce new things to keep it fresh and exciting, the mole does a lot of that work just kind of organically. But I would say that the and we talked a lot about this during the mole one, the person who is the mole themselves is going to have a nearly impossible time making it the distance without a good number of people figuring out that it's them, not because they are necessarily doing anything wrong or being too obvious, but I feel like over the course of however many games you're going to be playing with the group over the course of a season, let's call it 25 to 30, somewhere in there, everyone else is going to somewhere along the way do at least a couple of things that are just like so face up civilian that they basically can't be the mole. Like, or you can just get a reliable enough read over the course of a month or however long it takes to film one of these seasons that by the end of the game, it's going to be exceedingly difficult for the mole not to be known by the last few players left there. And that's something that I just don't know how virtually anyone is able to get past. And maybe it is the case that in not the American versions exclusively, but over the course of the like Dutch versions and Australian versions, whatever, plenty of countries have had the mole. And I'm guessing that somewhere along the way there has been a mole who has just like completely snowed everyone. And the other two were both like doing their final quiz unaware of who necessarily the mole even was. But in general, I think it would be, I'm reluctant to use the word like proven out, but I think there would be a reliable trend of it being pretty easy to be the mole in the early days and just not really stand out. And then at a certain point, it becoming very, very difficult. And I'm actually going to be kind of curious to track along this season now here in season two, when I feel like the kind of tipping point is between how it being easy to be the mole kind of under the radar versus, okay, it's going to be very difficult to be the odd person out after this point in the game. But I would at least potentially not like to spend much more time thinking about all of the various hypothetical 20 seasons and evolution of the mole, because I do have some slight concerns at the very least about this being something that would at least conceivably get a bit easier for the non-mole contestants than it already is. And again, I go into any season I watch of the mole more or less feeling very bad for the mole, because I do think it is an extraordinarily kind of uphill battle over the course of the season there, but at least you get to be on all of the TV episodes. Dom, returning quickly to everyone being plunged to their death in the bungee jumping, there aren't a ton of big kind of like character segments or anything, not only early on in these episodes, but just in general on the mole. You're not getting heavy focus on, oh, so-and-so is being really interesting here today, and this is a big character you should be paying attention to. But I did want to flag up that the person who is definitely standing out the most for me early on in this rewatch, and it began at the plunge of death when she says, just before she is shoved off the ledge, "Tell Michael J. Fox I love him," is Katie. Dom, tell Katie I love her. Katie has been an early favorite for me on this rewatch.
Back off, Colin, she's mine.
Okay, I am guessing that's going to be a pretty popular take as people begin rewatching or perhaps watching for the first time The Mole 2 here again. And speaking of Katie, Dom, as we get into our next mission here, everyone is going to get a journal, which is a staple of The Mole, once they arrive back to like their base camp or whatever, and they're going to get a few hours to kind of talk amongst themselves and gather information to be used in these upcoming games and quizzes where they're going to need to know about each other and know some random details, some extremely random details, as it turns out, about each other along the way. And we show up to the next challenge where the game is, okay, you've all just had all this time to meet and greet and find out some background on each other. We want the four people who you guys think know the most about their fellow contestants to come forward, and they're going to be answering 8 questions about various people's backgrounds and who fits into, who is the answer to having written this on their pregame application, essentially. And if you get all 8 of these questions correct, $40,000 is going to be added to the group prize pool. If you get 4 of them incorrect, you are going to have all of your personal items in your bags burned in this bonfire. So if you get 1 wrong, you get no money. If you get 4 wrong, you lose everything you brought with you. And that is going to include Al's family photo, Heather's annotated Bible that she's had for her entire life, and most importantly, Dom, Katie's stuffed animal cow meadow muffin. And it turns out that these questions are going to be insanely difficult. And the group is just...
But meadow muffin was doomed from the outset. There was no chance it was making it through this episode.
The group is going to go 0-for-4 immediately and just watch all of their stuff get put into the bonfire there. And Katie with meadow muffin is the big heartbreaker there.
I adored the first question in this challenge, which was, who wants to normalize relations with Cuba? So, first of all, way to date this entire season of the mall.
Yeah, but also Obama, as it turns out.
Yeah, well, it feels like when you know basically nothing about these people, and yeah, you've exchanged some of these topics. I don't think who wants to normalize relations with Cuba was really coming up much in casual conversation, but. If you had to look at this cast and guess who would be likely to bring it up, well, firstly, find anyone who might be from Cuba and probably disqualify them, based on the usual leanings, I suppose, of Cuban Americans who, especially if they're from the Florida region. And then maybe narrow it down to people who were alive during the Bay of Pigs, who maybe have some modern frame of reference for what Cuba is or its geopolitical situation. And then that gets you down to basically Bill and Patrick. And then of the two, Bill was in the Navy, so maybe a little less likely to be him. And I feel like you could maybe have arrived at Patrick. And maybe that's me being unfair based on just knowing how it turned out and that he was the answer. But if you have to answer someone in the dark, I feel like he's a pretty good bet.
That's fair, although I think they went into this challenge expecting it to be like, how old is Darwin?
Right.
Where did this person go to college or whatever? And it's, who said that their favorite beer is Sam Adams Lager? Like, all these things that they would never conceivably get to. Like, who's going around saying, hi, I'm Heather, I'm 25. And by the way, I feel really strongly about normalizing relations with Cuba.
Bribs is a single issue voter. And sure enough, that issue is normalizing relations with Cuba.
I, of course, am now forgetting, but all 4 of the questions that we saw them be asked were just like, totally ridiculous to me. So I think literally each of their guesses may have been prefaced by them saying, well, I'm just kind of throwing an arrow in the dark here, throwing a dart, I guess, here. And you're going to have a very hard time going not only 8-for-8, but even getting more than 4 correct if you're basically just guessing between 13 other people for each of these questions. So right away, they just go 0-for-4. All their bags are burnt. And this would be one of those areas, Dom, where I think a lesson may not have been learned from season 1. For we certainly spent a decent number of missions in season 1 coming in here more or less feeling bad for the contestants that they were put into such a difficult kind of task to win in the first place. And this is an early standout along those types of lines.
This one is just cruel as well. Like, did you need to burn all that shit? And like, imagine if Katie Hood just goes home in the next episode, right? And it's like, okay, well, you had, I guess, a week out there on location, didn't go very far, and also this priceless sentimental object that means so much to you is gone and it's never coming back. And that's going to be your abiding memory of this experience in 5 years. It's not going to be the 1 week that you spent out in Switzerland. It's going to be you're going to bed at night and you no longer have meadow muffin by your side.
Right, exactly. You came on this reality show. You were the first one out. You embarrassed yourself on TV. You got no money. And now your only thing that you love in life is gone. So thanks for playing, Katie.
You let yourself down, you let your family down, you let Fidel Castro down, and now Menem Muffin is dead, and he's never coming back.
Yeah, well, Meadow might be making a return later on. We will see. But Dom, I wanted to also flag up here before we get over to the quiz. And as usual, there's not honestly a ton to be even talking about from the quiz itself, short of the result. It's basically just 10 different ways of asking who is the mole. But we do see early on here, and this may be a place that stands out as, I don't know if this necessarily would have been happening so quickly if this were the first season, but even in this first episode, we see some early coalitions forming here. Not alliances, Dom. We never use the word alliance, just coalitions forming here, notably between Heather and Katie during that first kind of getting to know you phase, and then also Darwin and Lisa, it seems like, have been connecting right away and sharing information. And this is certainly something that we're going to see more of during these very early episodes as well. Spoiler alert. Again, along those lines is people right away wanting to play, at least as far as I can remember, a more kind of actively strategic game and really being selective at who they are sharing information with, while being pretty aggressive in trying to get information from other people. And I think that is another possible area where the mole too, and people just having seen how the show works before, could be a big improvement over the mole one, as they go in knowing, okay, this is a total information battle, and I want to get on top of that pretty quickly.
As you recall, did young, sweet, preteen Colin, or possibly surly teen Colin, have any early reads or contenders for who the mole might be here?
I don't remember who my early reads necessarily were, although I definitely remember, as was the case for all of the reality TV that I was watching back in the extremely early 2000s, being really interested in it personally, but not knowing anyone else who was watching any of these shows, and going online to read whatever kind of conversation I could that was, or articles or whatever, about whatever the show in question was. And without giving away the specifics here, I don't have a firm memory of my like early leaning on who the mole might be, because it did not take long for the internet to put together who the mole was. And that was something I was aware of relatively early into the season.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, more along those lines as we get there. I wish I had a clear memory of who.
I do wonder if, sorry to cut you off, but I wonder if that is something that actually would become more apparent if the show did run for 20 seasons, is that facade dropping of, like, you don't know and probably don't care ultimately who the mole really is. And it's hard to tell whether you're a player or a viewer. It feels like there's no code to crack. There's no way to actually figure it out. And it does seem mostly random, and a show like Whodunit can really lean into the theatrics of that, right, and pull that off still, whereas the mole, you need the tasks or the characters or some other aspect of the show to be engaging, because that central question of who is the mole actually is not all as cracked up to be when it comes down to it. So I think once you got to the mole 12, the mole 15, the mole 20, then people may have just tired of the central premise. That being said, you have long-standing mole franchises in other countries, like the Belgian one, Wie is de Mol, which, yeah, checking here, it looks like 7 seasons, where it seemed like that show was still very well-received without needing to mix things up too much. So maybe there's stuff you can do with the central format to keep it interesting, but I think it is a show unlike, Survivor or Big Brother, where the core conceit is enough by itself, and it's often frustrating how much they choose to deviate from that. With a mole, I think you have to, because there is just this fundamental flaw at the heart of the concept that you either need to, I guess, lean into somehow, or lean away from, or do something weird to cover it up, but you need to do something with it and acknowledge it in some way, because otherwise you're just doomed to fail.
Yeah, and if memory serves, I think it was the case that it wasn't even based too much on the TV episodes and was more on clues ABC was putting out there in some sort of like promotional material or whatever. Those were pretty quickly cracked by some people on the internet. And then it was kind of an open secret along the way that this person was locked in as the mole, more or less, like, guaranteed, and they ended up, of course, being right. And I would say that it took a bit away from the season for me, but I absolutely agree with your overall point that the success or failure of any given season of The Mole is going to come down to a lot more than just, like, protecting the identity of the mole or maintaining that mystery or whatever. I think it's entirely about how interesting the games are along the way and the kind of individual decision points that the contestants themselves, who are not the mole, are going to be facing there. But one question that I have for you, I'm going to offer this up to you to see if you can get this, is I definitely remember from not necessarily episode one, but from the very early episodes, 12-year-old Colin had a locked in favorite contestant on this season. Dom, who do you think it was?
I'm guessing it wasn't Katie, because otherwise that would just be way too obvious. Bribs, of course, has to be an early frontrunner, as he is in all things. I'm going to say a young Colin took a liking to Bill, maybe, just as this, like, the kindly, avuncular, you know, Navy guy.
That is incorrect. I'll give you...
I get this. This was also the peak of Rudy Bosch hype, as I recall, so maybe some of that would have spilled over.
It's certainly possible, but Bill was not someone who stood out to me right away. Do you want to take one more guess?
I'm going to say... I think you would have been an Al fan.
I certainly was an Al fan, although... For whatever reason, when I was watching the early episodes, and I think this does track now, having seen the first few here, this is a person getting at least a decent amount of screen time along the way. I was a big Darwin fan during my initial.
That was going to be my next choice, actually. Yeah.
Oh, okay, sure, Dom.
okay, fine.
Incidentally, watching these opening credits and, like, meeting all of the players, I discovered the unfortunate fact, as we were doing our Mole 1 coverage, that Anderson Cooper was younger at the time than I was when we were covering the Mole 1. So, of course, Anderson is still younger than me, but seeing all of these players and their ages again, I was blown away watching the opening credits and seeing, like, Al is my age now, or, like, Darwin is 3 years younger than me, Lisa is 3 years younger than me. And by the way, Dom, I know I don't have to tell you this because I'm sure you're already planning a big event around this. My birthday is in 2 days at the time of this recording, so I'm about to be conclusively older than Al was during this season, which is, like, mind-blowing to me. And I know I've brought this up before, but, like, even to this day, as a 33-year-old person,
soon to be 34.
Thank you, Dom. I see footage from Survivor Borneo and still look at Jenna Lewis as, like, a full-blown adult who is older than I am, even though she's, like, 22 or something at the time of that recording. And Al in particular is the one where it's like, this guy's a dad of multiple kids who has been happily married for a decade or whatever. And it's like, yeah, dude, he's younger than you are today.
Yeah, and he's not even Mormon, you know, he's not even one of the religions, but that would just be an automatic, you know, life path for him to take. But it is increasingly galling watching these, these younger contestants than me, who all are very well established and successful in their careers, seem to be crushing it in life for the most part. It's like, well, great. Not a great comparison to make for myself there. But yeah, anyone who wants in on Colin's surprise birthday party, a surprise to me because I forgot about his birthday, by all means, coordinate with me and we'll work something out. Even though, I guess, by the time you're hearing this, it will be too late. But this is us making it up to you.
I shouldn't have even told you that because now I'm sure you're going to take on your own little mole role here, and sabotage my birthday somehow, even though I'm not doing anything exciting for it. Either way, Dom, we are going to have our first quiz here, and we are ultimately going to find that Bob is going to be coming away with the red thumbprint. And I certainly remembered and looked forward to the after someone is eliminated, we go around in a circle and say nice things about them to Anderson for their kind of exit montage. What I did not remember, and I'm guessing this was probably the case in the Mole 1, but it really stood out to me in the Mole 2 here, is right after they get the red thumbprint, the person just gets up and walks away in complete silence just before the say something nice about my friend Bob segment.
Yeah, it is a very jarring contrast for sure.
Yeah, I don't think that I thought the person was there to like hear their own funeral or whatever, but it is weird that they literally can't say a word on their way, or at least the episodes that I've seen to this point, they aren't choosing to say anything on their way out. And then we go around for their for the condolences on their loss there, but that is going to do it for Bob here in episode one. And we didn't really get to see anything about Bob. What about Bob, Dom? From a classic movie with Bill Murray, excuse me, and Richard Dreyfuss that Dom has probably not heard of, but I loved it as a kid. I assume it still holds up.
Very much looking forward to the sequel, What About Bribs, coming to a theater near you sometime soon.
We see very little of Bob, and I think that is roughly in line with what we got in the premiere episode of The Mole 1 as well. We saw him do his task during the biathlon, and I think that was just about it. A pretty under-the-radar edit here for a first boot, you know, certainly compared to Survivor and Big Brother, etc., where they're basing the entire story around why this person was a justifiable person to be leaving early here. But I feel like Bob, and this may be a bit lost on you or other people who haven't watched ahead too far yet, it seems like he gets more kind of character development after he's out of the game than he gets during the game. There are a couple of references later on to Bob just kind of like not paying much attention and just kind of hitting on all the women, and that's why he was the first victim here.
Story definitely checks out on that one.
Yes. So there goes Bob. And what more do we want to be getting into? Again, the quiz is honestly like the least exciting part of the episodes, other than when we get the result from it. But what more before the spoiler zone do you want to say about The Mole 2 premiere, or just The Mole in general?
So with the quiz this time around, it's 10 questions rather than 20, and that's a standard moving forward. And
I think,
also,
I think, sorry to interrupt, but I think the quiz was it always 20 questions, or was that just the final? I think generally it was 10 questions and then the final was longer. I'm not 100%
there. It's saying on the wiki page for The Mole too that each quiz consisted of only 10 questions and season one had 20 questions apiece. And then the other aspect there is the audience gets to see all 10 of those questions. So you don't have to fill in the gaps or speculate or try and guess what mattered in the quiz as a whole, just based on the snippets that we did get. And the thing that you take away from this first quiz, at the very least, is it seems so completely arbitrary, right? Where there's that opening question of, is the mole male or female, where you're kind of bisecting the cast in two. But beyond that, each of the questions seems completely individual, whereas which position was the mole sitting in as you go around the circle in this one location, or where did the mole go to college, where I think there were 13 distinct answers. There may have been like one overlap or something, but either way, basically all of the questions just had individual answers for the contestants, where I guess maybe you forget where the person you think is the mole went to college and you're just really just picking something in the dark. But for the most part, even if you knew, like, even if you had all of the contestants' bios in front of you, 9 out of the 10 questions would essentially reduce to, who is the mole? Is it Ali, Bob, and so on down the line, all the way through? And you're just repeating that 8 or 9 times. And so at that point, you have to wonder, does it make sense to hone in on, let's say, 1 or 2 contestants and like alternate answers between them just to kind of give you maximum coverage? Do you try and cast your net as wide as possible so that, you know, you're never going to get a high score, but that's not what matters here, right? All that you want to avoid is getting the lowest score. And that's maybe another flaw with the way that the quiz system is designed, where there's no incentive to really take a risk early on or to not play it safe. All you need to do is not be the slowest one with a crocodile hot on your heels, so to speak, and you move on to the next round. And there's no extra money, no extra credit, anything like that. So with that in mind, like, what do you think the right move is here for this initial quiz when you have so little to go on and you're mostly just picking names at random?
So I think, yeah, you want to split between a few people and just hope. And I think it's a realistic hope that someone out there only gets like 0, 1, or 2 answers correct, and that you are not that person, because as you flagged up, all that matters is not coming in last. You don't get anything for like being the winner of a given quiz there. And over the course of the game, I think it certainly makes sense to transition into focusing on just one or two people and eventually just one person once you get a lot closer down to the end there. But certainly in the early game, I would be trying to split between several different people, and maybe that sort of thing. Maybe what we kind of see like a clear evolution of, if the mole were to go for like 20 seasons or whatever, is people having a better understanding of how to approach the different phases of the game and specifically of the quiz there. Like, we may be at the point where everyone just goes in knowing, okay, obviously it's early on. I want to space this out a little bit so that I am covered and not just having all of my eggs in one basket and risking getting a zero if I'm wrong after these first couple of days here. But I was thinking with that in mind that weirdly, the who is the mole question would actually be one of the ones that would be the highest likelihood for people to deviate from the actual person they think is the mole. Because if you're really focused on one or two people and studying a lot about like their specific background, you're going to have more answers to the specific questions along the way about like where they went to college, what room they slept in, etc. And who is the mole is maybe the easiest of all to kind of hedge your bets and just put your vote on someone you don't actually think is the mole, but you just want some coverage on.
Well, I think that the basic way that a lot of people would approach this quiz is, all right, I think this person is the mole. I'm going to answer the quiz as if this person is the mole. And so let's say I think it's Ribs, just to pick a name completely at random. Where did Bribs go to college? All right, I'm going to pick that. Which position was Bribs standing in? How many glasses of wine did Bribs drink? And just answer all of those accordingly. And I guess, is the mole male or female? Well, Bribs is male, so we'll put male. And you have an answer set that makes total sense if it's Bribs. And if it's Bribs, then you pass with flying colors. You run up the score, you get 10 out of 10 or whatever. But if it's anyone else, maybe you just fail horribly and you're in contention to be one of the first ones eliminated. And so you can imagine a bunch of people taking that approach with various different contestants that they just have this read on. And so maybe I fill it out for Bribs, you fill all of it out for Heather, let's say. And so it basically comes down to, all right, I get 0 out of 9 for all of the specific questions. You get 0 out of 9 for all of the specific questions because the mole is Darwin instead. But then on that first question of, is the mole male or female? Well, I picked Bribs because, of course, I'm going to pick Bribs. I picked the mole as male, and so I kind of get it right entirely by accident because I'm thinking of the wrong person. And you don't. And I stay on, and you're eliminated. You're going home to your fried stuffed animal because you just happen to get the wrong 50% on that first question. And I honestly think that's how many of these answer profiles may have gone here in the first week.
I totally agree with that. And for the reasons you laid out, I think that is a bad idea early on to put all of your eggs in one basket just because all of the answers are so specific and it's hard to get points accidentally on such questions where each of the answers is very clearly tailored to one and only one of the people in the cast. And I would imagine that you are right, though, that there have probably been people who have survived one, if not multiple rounds, getting very close to zero correct on the quiz just because other people were also getting zero correct, but doing it more slowly. Slower? Heard it both ways. I would be curious to know. So, surely, out of however many seasons at this point have been done of The Mole internationally, let's say, and I think this may be even erring on the low side, there have been 20 seasons of various forms of The Mole. Surely someone must have made it to like at least episode 5 or 6 or so with no idea who the actual mole was, but thinking that they had a good idea of who the mole was because they kept surviving, but it was because other people were just doing slightly worse along the way there.
Isn't that what a certain cantankerous contestant may have done in the first season, as I recall?
It's absolutely possible that we have already seen this play out ourselves. I'm sure that many people have survived getting zero correct on the quiz just because they were faster in getting their zeros. But I would be interested in knowing, like, if someone in Belgium, for instance, made it all the way to, like, Final Four or whatever with just, like, the dead wrong idea. It seems like we might be even reaching the sample size where something like that could come into play there with, like, an exceptionally...
You said the tiebreaker. Is it always just who was the slowest to complete the quiz?
Yes.
Huh. In that case, I actually think by far the most important thing on this first quiz is just to not be last, like more so than essentially anything else, right? Because I think it's likely, I would actually be very confident that Bob... It's easy to look at him and think, okay, this guy is kind of a class and he's not here for the right reasons, Colin. It's like the opposite of The Bachelor. The right reasons this time is not trying to find your soulmate or whatever, but he's off flirting with Olivia and all the others. I would bet by bottom dollar that Bob was actually tied for whatever the lowest score was with at least one other person, but he just dilly-dallied too much on the quiz, and that's what his ultimate fate was, because it is so easy to just miss completely with this full cast and no useful information. Is actually quite difficult to get any questions right, even if you're doing whatever the best split ends up being of maybe you pick like four or five different people and you try and get like two questions right for each, and that score you can be pretty sure is going to get you up into the safe spot. Even if you like you whiff on the 50-50 male or female question, and also you whiff on anything else, probably at least one other person is going to be just zeros across the board too. And so as long as you turn in your paper faster than they do, you're good, right?
I certainly have a memory of watching whichever celebrity mole she was on with Kathy Griffin, where they at the like reunion or whatever highlighted what a smart idea it was on her part to do the quizzes very quickly, because she was a big fan of the show and recognized that same thing of speed is an enormously important element here because it is the tiebreaker. Although, Dom,
but this is kind of what I meant earlier about being a mole super duper fan would not actually help you all that much, because that realization, which was, you know, astute on Kathy Griffin's part, but I don't think you get that from watching the mole religiously. You get that from just thinking about the format for 5 seconds.
Yes, but I will say that you can go ahead and Venmo me your bottom dollar now, because this was not a tie. Just going off the logic that Anderson tells them when there is a tie, and he says time is the tiebreaker, and the person eliminated just lost on time.
Okay, well, when we... dole out the patron money or benefits for this month, you can take $1 back just to have as your own.
Oh, I only get your literal bottom dollar singular. I don't get all of your dollars down to the last one. Got it. All right. Well, in that case,
thank God I didn't say I would bet my life savings that, which I was very close to doing, by the way.
Yeah, I want the whole bank account. I want ravioli. I want your passport.
You can take him. Have him. Please take him off my hands.
No! Is ravioli being bad?
He's always been bad, but he's perfect anyway. We love him.
So, full disclosure, and the audience will know this, but Dom will not. Your mic was just breaking up a little bit, although it has improved, and I was imagining that it was ravioli, like, tugging at the cord.
He was purring loudly just then, so you may have heard some of that.
I did not. Although did get a nice dose of audio feedback, or not necessarily feedback, but it's improved. No one cares. We are moving on, Dom. There goes Bob. There goes our first quiz. And I think with all of that, there are going to be other things that come up in future podcasts that I wish I had been remembering to bring up now, and maybe a couple that come up in the spoiler zone here, but I think let's lift that barrier now. So if you were someone who has not seen beyond this point and would like to remain unspoiled, this is your official warning. We are entering the spoiler zone here now, and I will say, talking openly, certainly, about the eventual results and Mole's identity of Season 2, and probably, at least, firm plans along these lines, so be aware that the Mole 1 is also probably going to be something that we are talking about openly here as well. So I would say if you were not fully caught up on both of those seasons, now would be the time to pause this podcast and then come back to us whenever you are fully caught up there. But thank you for making it this far. Again, Mole 1, complete episode-by-episode coverage up over on the Patreon feed at patreon.com/DomandColin. If you would be interested after you binge the whole thing in listening to that. And actually, I think you can go episode by episode listening along there. But thank you guys who are going to be checking out here for making it this far. And I think that is enough meandering as we now officially enter the spoiler zone. So get out of here if you don't want to hear this sort of thing. This is your final warning. We're in the spoiler zone. Dom, welcome to the spoiler zone. It's been a while since we've been in the spoiler zone here, but let's dive in. We are officially now getting into spoiler territory, so get out. So
it's fun to be back in the spoiler zone. It's like we have the forbidden knowledge.
Yes, it honestly does feel very liberating, not having to dance around anything over the course of this episode going forward. Here we go with the spoiler zone, and the place that I want to start here, Dom, is the following hypothetical. You are a contestant on The Mole 2. You show up for filming on day one. You're just a regular non-mole player here. What are your thoughts about what production is going to want in their mole this time around, knowing that we know that Catherine was the first mole?
So this is the classic leveling war, which kind of parallels the deductions that people are trying to make in the game on a kind of individual basis or episode by episode basis. So you might think, given that Catherine was the mole the first time, they're not going to have it be someone in the same mold, the kind of a younger professional woman. And so in the dark, you're less likely to think someone like Heather or Lisa might be the mole, for example. And then maybe you think they would try and go for as big a contrast to the first mole as possible. So instead of it being the younger professional woman, maybe it's the older guy who like is different in every aspect, maybe personality-wise as well, which points you towards like a Patrick or a Bill. And then it's, okay, well, maybe it's not the person I most suspect or least suspect. It's the person in the middle, and I really can't define anything useful. And it's Bribs, because everything comes back to Bribs, Colin. Yeah, I think that, so even though in theory you can go as many levels deep on that as you want, I do think it just is true that it's less likely to be someone in the mold of Catherine. And maybe that doesn't move the needle a lot. Maybe it's only, you know, on that male versus female question, it's 55-45 in favor of male. But that's still a pretty substantial edge, given that you have almost nothing else to go on at this stage.
Yeah, I would be saying to myself, I don't know who it is, but it's probably not Heather, just because she looks so much like Catherine and is in roughly that same kind of demographic there. I would guess that they're not going for essentially the same idea that they went for the first time around. At the same time, and maybe this is kind of like Charlie bias from season one, a question I would definitely be asking myself a lot is, who are they not putting as the mole? And Charlie was certainly someone that fell into that category for me the first time around. And I think I would probably be inclined to say that Bill would be one of the lower likelihood people as far as my like initial impulse went as the direction that they would be like dying to go there for their mole the second time around here.
It's not just the fact that he isn't Catherine and he could not be any less Catherine if he tried. It's that you had a Bill in the form of Charlie on the first season, who was this cantankerous old git who was so wolfy and so just like needlessly aggressive and belligerent that, of course, he's not going to be the mole. And so, wouldn't it be a funny twist if this time around, the older, retired, like, services, police force guy, whatever, actually was the mole. And Bill does seem like someone who has the nous, has the social skills and the savvy and the ability to kind of blend in that he very easily could be the mole, right? So, I think maybe it's not exactly Bill. Maybe you don't get to that on day one and just hammer that hope at every single quiz, which that is the flaw of the show, right? Like, let's say you thought you turned up and you decided, this is my strategy. I will pick one person and that is my read. I will not be swayed from that read whatsoever. And if you decide on day one that read is Bill, congratulations. You just won whatever the eventual prize pool is, because you've won the season and nothing that happens in the 12 intervening episodes is going to matter one iota towards that eventual outcome. But I have to think that plays a somewhat big part in Dorothy's eventual win, because as the numbers dwindle down and she gets towards this final three with herself, Heather, and Bill, well, on this logic, it's probably less likely to be Heather and it's probably more likely to be Bill, and you have literally Heather and Bill there with you. So even if you had, you know, gone into a coma on day one and woken up here with this final three, you would stand a very good chance of getting it right just purely, you know, probabilistically based on that alone.
Yeah, I do think an argument could certainly be made that Heather is at least potentially kind of playing at a disadvantage as someone, if there's anyone, people are going to be saying to themselves, all right, well, they're probably not going this close to the first mole again. I think Heather would stand out as that person. And when she then is also not the mole, that may be a bit of a disadvantage for her there. But I would say, season two, the cast as a whole, maybe I was like heavily biased doing my season one rewatch because I obviously knew who the mole was and who all the civilian players were. And I just, for whatever reason, wasn't able to open my mind to the alternate kind of timelines there. But I feel like I would come away from looking at those two casts thinking that season two, for my money, I feel like has more contestants in it that I could easily see the producers choosing to be the mole than was the case for season one.
Yeah, I think when you look over this cast, there are some people who seem a little kind of indistinguishable, but a lot of those are kind of, or either that, they're kind of nondescript, or they're so overtly standing out from the pack that it probably can't be them, because how are they going to keep their start for the entire run? But most of those people go early when you look at that eventual boot list. So, you know, Bob, I think, is someone who doesn't seem like he's going to be able to do a professional, responsible job as the mole. He goes out. Ali, someone who you don't really have time to develop a strong opinion about, which you might think would make her a good candidate for being the mole. But I think the great thing about Catherine was that she was, for the most part, very capable. And although she had some of those moments of weakness and some of those were sincere and some of those were hammed up for the cameras, I think because that was almost the exception that proved the rule, you were able to get this quite complex picture of her as a contestant, as an operator. And so when it was unmasked that she was the mole, you weren't too surprised, but you kind of understood it. It made sense and you kind of respected her journey towards that. Whereas some of the contestants, it's like, well, if this person turned out to be the mole, I would almost think that they made a bad choice in choosing this person, because there's no way that's going to be satisfying or interesting by the end. It's going to be them just kind of coasting along under the radar, and maybe they find some inventive way to sabotage one task or something, but they don't have the kind of the air of a mole, right? And so when you knock out the extremes on either end of that, you do still have a decent body of people towards the end game in the season who could conceivably be the mole. So, you know, maybe it is Darwin. Maybe it's Dorothy who turns out to be our eventual winner. Bill, of course. And then there's Al, who, you know, a lot of people going into that season one finale thought Jim could be the mole, right? And if you think that Al has Jim vibes to a degree, then maybe that parallel still survives. I think even as you get down to the end game, which in the mole sneaks up on you pretty quick, you still have a few people on the list. You have some cause to kind of doubt your initial read, and that's a good thing, and that's not actually something you can take for granted in a lot of seasons of the mole.
Although I will say this, if this does turn out to be, and maybe I shouldn't say this, but I'm gonna say it, if this does turn out to be another ABC endeavor here for this at least possible upcoming season or like reboot of The Mole that we have been talking about. Between pretty much every single season of The Mole other than this exact one, and also factoring in another ABC show along similar lines, Whodunit, if I were to be a civilian contestant in the mix there, I don't think it would be unfair to go in on day one with a pretty strong lean that the most attractive woman in the cast may be the person that they want to just be guaranteed to be on every single episode. Cause that I feel like historically bears out as a trend on ABC's part.
There is a crude, but depressingly appealing logic to that.
I feel weird saying that, but like, it is impossible to ignore the selections that they made on who we want to guarantee is on every episode of the collective, like, six seasons that fit that description. There are other exceptions now that are coming to mind there for sure. But in general, that would be a direction that would be something that would at least cross my mind there. So let's talk a little bit about some things, knowing what we know about how all of this is going to play out, that were fun to kind of rewatch here with the full benefit of that knowledge. I did like very much that as they were taking the quiz, Dorothy, our eventual winner again, is the person who gets the voiceover talking about how suspicious she is of Bob, our eventual first boot here, being the mole potentially. I thought that was fun. And then along similar Dorothy lines, Bill and Dorothy have a fun little exchange, our eventual mole and eventual winner here at the end of one of these tasks as well.
I wonder if Bill had any early reads on who he thought the most, savvy competitors were going to be.
That would be an interesting question. Yeah, I obviously can't speak on that myself, but it had not really crossed my mind that, like, when you are the mole, obviously your first concern is protecting that secret and doing whatever the producers want you to do, frankly. But there's not a whole lot to be thinking about in game terms when you know the identity of the mole, other than who's on to you and who's doing a good job at this. And that actually, from both Bill and Catherine's perspective, I would be really curious to know who they thought, like, were the front runners along the way. Mm-hmm. I'm guessing Catherine probably pretty quickly pieced together that Steven and Jim were doing a pretty good job with the overall dynamic on that one. But
that was complicated because she genuinely developed this close friendship with the two of them. And so that is maybe the best strategy in the mole, if you can do it, is find the person you think is likely to be the mole and just befriend them and become their ride or die. And even if they are contractually prohibited, if not in practice prohibited from tipping you off to that or sharing any useful information, just being the person who knows the mole the best is going to let you ace that quiz when it gets down to the very end. But it seemed like Bill was able to keep his distance more from the rest of the cast, and maybe that's just an age thing where you have Bill at 58, Patrick at 51, and then I guess Myra was in her 40s, but after that it's a pretty steep drop off to the rest of this cast.
And then the rest of the cast is younger than me. Really fun stuff.
Yeah, and actually mostly younger than me now, dear God. Yeah, a lot of them young enough to be his children. So there's just definitely a different dynamic than there is where, I think Catherine, Jim, and Steven were just the most likely to become friends anyway. And then, of course, Catherine was torn between her role as the mole of trying to do what she could towards that end, but then feeling conflicted because she generally had become friends with the two people who she was, her role was to take money away from and to try and sabotage. Whereas, at least in my recollection, Bill never really had that kind of conflict. And maybe there's the military background there too. He had a job and he went in and he did it. He completed his mission and then he got out again.
Yeah, there are many things that I have kind of vague memories of that I'm sure will become obviously much more clear as I rewatch all of this. But one of them is Bill in that final episode almost hilariously punting the go door to door and answer questions about who's more likely to do whatever that we saw some version of in The Mole 1 at the final three as well there, where he used some interesting logic to kind of justify tanking that challenge. But he also then had an opportunity to take $100,000 out of the pot at the very end of the season if he wanted, like, a final dossier of information about who the mole would be. And obviously, if his goal was merely taking money out of the pot, of course he would do that every time, but he let them keep it. He said, I don't need the dossier, I'm fine, and let's leave the $100,000.
Yeah.
A couple other things that, and possible spoiler alert here again, even though I, you know, we're in the spoiler zone, people know, I'm hoping, they certainly know by now the way things are going to play out, but hopefully have some sort of memory of the rest of the season and some of the various specifics. But I was thinking about things that stand out in my memory that I'm looking forward to seeing yet again. And that kind of end game with Bill and that whole dynamic is certainly among them. But one person I've really had my eye on here, and I'm excited to see the whole storyline all over again, now knowing how it's going to end, but without ever being able to rewatch these episodes before, is definitely Olavia, who we saw get this exemption in season one. Again, I have watched the next couple of episodes as well already, and she has some really good stuff in those too that we will certainly be getting to in the very near future. But the big Olavia plot point that stands out in my mind that is going to be really exciting to get to whenever we get to it, I frankly don't even have a firm memory of what episode number it is. I know it's roughly halfway through the game, but Olavia is going to be the person where they show up at a certain point, they all take the quiz, and then there was some sort of poll conducted of, I want to say it was like who everyone had to rank who they trust the least or who they think is most likely to be the mole or something like that, where whoever got the lowest average or highest average, whoever was the standout from that kind of group poll, was going to be made an offer where they get $50,000 if they just agree to quit on the spot. And Olavia is going to be that person, and Olavia is going to take it. And again, I clearly don't remember the specifics there, but Olavia has been for sure an early standout for me on this rewatch. And that is going to be, I think, probably one of the high points of the season, is seeing that all play out again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Olavia, I'm sure we'll get more into this whole offer and decision when we get to that episode. But I think Olavia may be the single best person to give that offer to in terms of someone likely to actually take it, to kind of cause a discussion by doing so. But for it to actually be a tough choice. Whereas I think some people would be like, okay, yeah, I'll take the money, see ya. And then others would just not take it under any circumstances. And so you kind of want it to go to someone who at least is going to consider the offer and maybe even act on it for that offer to mean anything in the first place.
And I think it's furthermore great when that person is, if memory serves, someone that many active contestants still had firmly in the mix to potentially be the mole. And now, wait, they're gone? They can't be the mole? That's a total game changer. And that is something I'm really looking forward to. And I definitely recall that I don't think we would get this information in that episode, but later on, it must be in the reunion, Anderson drops the bomb that if Olavia had declined that offer, we don't know how the rest of the season would have played out, but we do know that the winner would not have been Dorothy because she got the lowest on the quiz that night, and she would have been eliminated if Olavia had said no. So that's going to be a lot of fun when we get there. And then a couple other random things that I don't understand how or why they're standing out in my memory. I definitely have fond memories of the Loved Ones episode. I believe it is the challenge where everyone gets their loved one out there and they have to like describe them to someone else. And then they get picked out of like the crowd, in some like Italian town or some, maybe Swiss town, something like that, that the Loved Ones episode has a really fun challenge where they all get to interact. And then also, Unfortunately, I believe it is Katie who is going to be booted in that episode with her loved one right next to her at the quiz. Like, they all get the results with their family members, and that was something that I remember thinking was really exciting in the moment and, like, heartbreaking, of course, for Katie and whoever it is who's out there with her. Similarly, my man Darwin, I believe, is going to be the one who finds out that he is eliminated during the Anderson inputs everyone's name into the computer segment, where Anderson goes through literally the entire cast and everyone gets the green thumbprint and Darwin is just the last one left. I think it's Darwin. That definitely happens to someone, and maybe I'm wrong about who that ends up being, but I want to say that it was Darwin where that ends up happening. So that is going to be an interesting thing, where it does appear that Anderson is really putting them in a non-predetermined order. Although, I will take issue with him saying that it's being done in a random order, as always. First of all, you landing on a person's name is not random in the literal sense. And furthermore, it is not always how you've done it. You used to ask for volunteers of who wanted to go in The Mole Season 1. But gross pedantry, however you pronounce that word, aside, if that's even a word. I also...
Hold on. You can't, however you pronounce that word, about the word pedantry. That's the last one you could possibly do that for.
Well, I'm doing it. So in perhaps peak Colin Stone form there. I also, of course, remember the Tiny Bubbles challenge at Final Four being an absolute banger, and I'm looking forward to that. I think that's Anderson's Funhouse is what it's called, where Al gets trapped in the room just listening to Tiny Bubbles on repeat overnight, and just goes completely insane. And then furthermore, an Anderson highlight that I'm looking forward to that also pertains to Al is there's some challenge where Al has to, like, pour wine for some reason, and I may be confusing this with something from The Mole 1, but I'm not sure, where someone, like, stomps the wine. Was that in The Mole 1, or is that coming up in The Mole 2? Al has to pour wine for one reason or another and, like, messes up and complains about how unfair and impossible it is. And then Anderson's like, oh, I used to be a waiter. I'll bet you $5,000 out of the group prize pool that I can do this better than you can do it. And there are a lot of good Anderson moments along the way here. Incidentally, in case I forget, or just don't notice this when I'm doing my notes for whichever of episode 2 or 3 it is in, thank God the Anderson just kind of standing there smirking in the background, snacking on something as one of the contestants is huffing and puffing for one reason or another, or is on their way about town, is back for The Mole too. There's some scene that is a lot of fun in one of these upcoming episodes where, much like Anderson just kind of munching on a baguette in the background as people are lost in France in The Mole 1, there's something similar here in Switzerland in The Mole 2 where the contestants are out and about doing something and you get a shot of Anderson just, like, casually munching on some Swiss cheese or whatever he's eating in the background there that I am going to enjoy a lot. So, Dom, I'm sure, again, there's plenty from this premiere that we have forgotten to get to this point, or just overall themes that will come up in future podcasts. But what more for today do you feel like is worth getting into?
I think I'm good.
All right. I believe that is going to do it for us here. And as things stand right now, I believe the plan is this first episode we are going to put up over on the main feed for free, and then the remainder of The Mole 2 rewatch we're going to be doing over on the Patreon feed alongside the already pre-existing Mole 1 rewatch, which one more time is at patreon.com/DomandColin. So if you would like to join us for the rest of this season, that is going to be happening over there. But until next time, he is, of course, on Twitter at DomHRV. I can be found at Colin Stone. We will talk to you guys soon. Take care, everybody. And tell Michael J. Fox I love him.